Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Ramble Meets is sponsored by Bet365.
Max Rushton, amateur footballer, host of the world's biggest football podcast, The Guardian Football Weekly, and most importantly, the voice of Gaviscon.
Max, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. They said it wasn't possible. They said it couldn't happen. They said this is kind of like our Marvel moment, isn't it?
Well, what you want it to be really is like that, the Anchorman scene.
Yeah.
So you need James Richardson
over there.
Opposite.
Never heard of him.
Okay, you there.
Yeah.
And who's there?
Probably, I don't know really. I think that's it.
Are we the top three?
I hope so. I mean, if you're going to go down that road, it should be Marcus here, not me, because Marcus is kind of the host.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Well, not kind of the host, he is the host.
Okay. Do you aspire to that?
No. It's better to be at the right hand of God, I'd say.
You don't want to be the new Marcus Speller.
No.
You're happy being the current Luke Moore.
Yeah. As happy as I can be in the circumstances, I would say. Yeah. But thanks for coming in.
No, thanks for having me.
I think people will be excited for this one.
Because well, you say that.
And we can but disappoint them. But, give us a little. I mean, people are used to hearing you as the voice of Football Weekly, and obviously Soccer AM and all that kind of stuff. And of course, the glory, voice of Gaviscon.
The glory years, 2008 to 2015.
Yes,
as they're popularly known.
Yeah, does that happen a lot?
I think it's universally known that they were the best years of Soccer AM. I'm not sure if anyone else agrees with that.
What year did you do Soccer AM?
2008 to 2015.
You did it for seven seasons.
Yeah,
and in between that was Andy Goldstein, or before that.
So, Lovejoy did a decade, Goldstein did a year. I was doing the late show on TalkSport, and Andy was doing Soccer AM, and then that switch happened.
Right.
And I was in Pret, and he walked in with his wife, I think quite recently, or a couple of years ago, and he said, "This is the man that almost ruined our child's life."
But you know, okay.
But, you know, we've all stolen jobs off each other and lost them to each other before. So I believe Andy has forgiven me now.
We're all in the same cesspool, mate, aren't we?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, do you honestly believe that it was still good in 2015? I was just asking.
Do you know what? I'm
not saying you weren't good.
No, I'm asking
if the show was good in 2015.
When you're doing it right, you're in such a bubble. So I think the most people that ever watched it was about 600,000, right?
Yeah.
But you felt that it was the whole country. And actually,
it's kind of greater than the sum of its parts for a long while, I'd say.
Yeah, I think actually it genuinely was, even towards the end of the time I was doing it, the advantage we had was if something funny happened in League Two, it was like a long clip show, right?
Yes.
And if you got really famous guests, you were lucky, and then some weeks you were like, oh, there's an indie band no one's heard of and they're not going to say anything.
Yeah.
And a championship footballer, and this might be a struggle.
Mm.
But even in 2015, if something funny happened in League Two, you didn't see it until Soccer AM.
Yeah. Okay.
So now you've seen it before that game's even finished.
Sure.
So I think it's much harder for them.
Yeah.
Look, I had just a brilliant time. There were bits I really didn't like the thought of the Soccerette part, right? Which was...
Mm. Was that still happening in 2015?
No. It took me 2 years to kill that bit.
Right, okay.
Like, I really was not very good at...
Or happy with it?
When I got the job, I probably would have done anything they wanted to do. Like,
right.
It was just like a life-changing moment for me.
Sure.
I wasn't in a position of any sort of power to say, I think this is really unedifying, or I don't like this bit, or whatever. I was just like, yeah, sure, tell me what to do. I mean,
right.
I'd never done a TV show, right? I was just totally...
Yeah.
I was just like a rabbit in the headlights. So there were bits I didn't like, but there were things that were just too much fun from that, you know.
Mm.
So recreating John Lewis adverts when you just spend a day dressed as a penguin,
yeah,
you know, and then think this is my job.
So
yeah, right?
Great fun at work, basically.
It was just really fun. We were in Rock of Ages.
Yeah,
we Amy McDonald. I got a record deal off Amy McDonald's manager. you know, the Scottish singer, you know him?
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah.
And there'd been this long-running thing about me being a clarinetist, right? Like, they gave me the job and they thought I was cool, and then they said, which three people do you want to have on the show? And I said, David Attenborough, Angela Lansbury and Dr. Carl Kennedy from Neighbours.
Yeah, okay.
And they basically thought, oh, we've hired the wrong person. Right. We've hired entirely
so how much due
person.
Diligence did they do on you to give you the job in the first place then? Because before that, you were BBC Radio London, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I was at Radio Cambridgeshire for 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? I did the longest ever radio show in a shopping centre in Cambridge, 6 days, for children in need.
You must have had a break.
You could have 15 minutes off every 8 hours, and you could play 2 6-minute songs back to back.
How did you sleep?
I had like a little bed in front of me, yeah. And at midnight I'd go to sleep for that 15 minutes,
yeah,
and then I'd just get sort of bashed, and I'd wake up and I'd introduce the Eagles quite regularly, the Eagles or anyone that.
That's quite dangerous, no?
By day five, I was hallucinating. Definitely, I was not. Totally
do you still hold the record now?
No, it took me longer to. I held the record for less time. Because some guy in Slovenia started on the Wednesday.
Oh, that's annoying.
But it doesn't, you know, it was funny. So I did that, and then I moved to BBC London as like a reporter, yeah, and like a newsreader. And I did, you know, some pretty heavy stuff like the Damilola Taylor trial and 7-7 mm-hmm. and things like that. But really, I just wanted to present.
Yeah, okay.
Eventually got the overnight show, which is a great time to be on air. It's a terrible time for your existence. Yeah. But everyone who rings in is...
Oh, you could cut your teeth properly there, yeah, right? Because you prepare for everything, right?
There was one show where someone had left Trivial Pursuit in, or we'd brought it in. We said, like, it's me and the producer versus the listeners. And you ring up and play for as long as you like, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll be the green disc, you'll be the yellow disc. We'll just go around the board, play Trivial Pursuit. And, you know, we'd be like, right, you've got a 6 pink question.
Can't do that on Soccer AM.
No, you can't. And I remember we were doing this show, and then... These guys had been on for like 40 minutes, and it's like 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, I don't know. And then we just heard this, can you keep it down, please? And we're like, who was that? And then I think it was Stephen Harrow was like, oh, it's just my parents telling me to go to bed. And you're like, you just had this total image of this guy. And I was like, oh, well, just go to bed, Steve, it's fine. Yeah. He went, no, I'll go out on the street. So then you had this image of a man in Harrow on his phone playing Trivial Pursuit.
Right.
So I did that. We did this astrology phone. Like on a Wednesday was astrology night, right?
Right.
Not an area of expertise for me.
No. Or anyone.
And this woman rang up. I can't remember her name. And she said, look, I work in finance and I don't think my... career's going that well, and I just wonder if it was, you know, anything to do with, you know, my node being near Neptune or something.
Right.
And before the astrologer started, I said, look, you know, you ring us up like every hour through the night. I'm just going to hazard a guess that maybe you're not getting enough sleep.
yeah, exactly right. That's got something to do with it, yeah.
So I did that, and then they took me off the overnight show in a kind of Jerry Maguire way. They took me to a cafe. This woman called Nikki, who wore leather trousers, and she said, you're never going to present at this station again.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I was really sad about that.
Yeah.
And in a cafe, so I couldn't like throw I couldn't have that a tantrum.
Well, I'm sure some people would have done.
I don't know.
You're far too genial for that.
Anyway, she left and went to Look East. And then the new boss ran out of famous people.
Right.
They couldn't agree terms. I'm pretty sure this is true with Pat Sharp.
Right.
And
well, Pat Sharp's a great radio broadcaster with some years standing.
Yeah, I know.
So not just about Funhouse, Max.
They couldn't agree terms with Pat in his sort of post-mullet days.
No.
And so they said, do you want to do the breakfast show for two weeks?
Yeah.
And then they just kind of forgot, and I did it for a year.
Right.
And that was brilliant. Like, it's just really, you know, breakfast radio is great.
So essentially, when I speak to people such as yourself on this kind of show, really it is... compared to people who have proper jobs that are difficult and that have to work hard at and that are really important, people like you and I, we just essentially mess around for a living.
Yeah, yeah.
And you read Modern History at Oxford University, is that right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I'd like to stress I'm still a man of the people.
Really no, but important. I'd like... No, and that's not... I wasn't going down that road.
No, I know.
The road I was going to go down, if I can navigate these sort of stormy waters without coming across as offensive, and I normally can't, is that's a good education, right? Yeah. That's something that probably lots of people would agree would set you up for not whatever you want to do, but if you work hard, it's going to give you a good start. Did you always want to come and do this kind of thing, or did you have your eyes or your sights set on something sort of more grander than that?
Or more proper? do you mean?
Yeah, just
like
kind
a
of,
proper
yeah.
job.
Yeah.
I don't...
Because you're obviously a clever guy, otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah, I think it's important to say I'm not a genius and you don't have to be to go there, right?
No.
And there is this total image. There is so, I mean, I could do a lot on how much I hate the media portrayal of Oxbridge, which is just yeah. Boris Johnson or Hugh Laurie or just the poshest people you can find.
Yeah.
And I'm by no means, you know, I'm not... you know, I wasn't born in a shoe, right? You know, I had a very nice, I had a really nice life. Like growing up in central Cambridge, I did joke about getting out of CB1, but like I had a lovely time. I don't know really. I sort of said when I was 8, I wanted to be Des Lynam, but I just...
It's kind of a common thing, right?
Yeah, but you know, I wasn't good enough to be a footballer and I guess it was kind of a throwaway. Eventually you want like Auntie Sylvia to stop asking you what
you want to do.
So it was just kind of a stock line. I didn't like do any... When I was at Oxford, there were people who sort of had contact books with like Pat Murphy's phone number or something.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in that school.
No.
I was the sports editor of the paper.
Okay.
Just because...
Of your college or the whole unit?
There were two universities, one of the university ones.
Okay.
And it was just because me and a Geordie mate would get a crate of beer on a Tuesday and just stay up all night writing terrible captions for photos and stuff.
Right, okay, yeah.
But I didn't really think about any of it properly. And then when I finished university, I used to work on the river in Cambridge, punting people up and down the river.
Okay.
Which was like brilliant summer job.
Yeah,
half
great.
Of your body got really fit.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Half
yeah.
of your body was just as flabby as it always was.
You were like roughing the down.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then, and, you know, you weren't pretty well in the summers and you were outside and it was nice. But like come November, and then my parents were like, right, now you've got to get a job.
Yeah.
And I think I did 2 weeks work experience at an advertising agency. Yeah. I hated it. So yeah. I had lots of friends who were going into law and
sure.
banking and things like that. And I didn't really understand, you know, and having internships at places called McBain or something.
Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
what, like, I was like, I don't know what that means.
Like consultancy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like nobody grows up thinking this is my dream, right?
Yeah.
To be no one knows what it is. I still don't know really what it is. Mm. But I got an email address that someone else, a mate of mine, who actually did go into advertising, actually, but he'd emailed somebody by guessing their email address from the end of the credits of Football Focus.
That's great.
A guy called Charles Runcie, right? Yeah. So I just emailed this person saying, look, can I come in? And I went and did work experience at Football Online, BBC mm-hmm. Sport Online. Mm-hmm. And it was really good because I did 2 weeks and a lot of it was, you know, just Five Live would have the reports during the game and you'd just write them up and that kind of thing. And I could the work I could kind of do... But I was 21 and I'd probably come out of university a little bit cocky.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably fair to say. And after 2 weeks, I sat down with this guy and he said, listen, you can do the work. Everyone thinks you're a twat, basically.
Right. Did he?
And that was like heartbreaking for me.
That's a great thing to hear, though. That is
so good.
Really
honestly, I owe him so much because you were like, I'd sort of come in and really failed to acknowledge that people had worked hard to get into these positions.
Yeah.
And I was just like this little...
Dick. Yeah, basically.
And like it was sort of spirit crushing to hear it, but it was really, it was the best, probably the best, that piece of advice. And a radio presenter called Ronnie Barber, who said, when you were reporting, if you don't have another question, just don't ask one.
Yeah,
just go back to you. It was a really good bit of advice, especially when you're starting out.
Yeah.
So from there is when he got me in touch with the sports editor at Radio Cambridgeshire.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing, you know, going to Cambridge United and interviewing John Taylor, the manager, like Cambridge's record ever goal scorer, now the manager.
Yeah.
And like the first few times you do this, you think, oh my God, this is amazing.
Dream stuff, yeah.
After about 10 of doing that, you're like, I'm asking this, so I'm just like, are there, you know, any injury
worries? Some people love their hometown, their hometown football club so much that's good for them. They'll do that forever.
Yeah.
You know, there's people, where I grew up in Portsmouth, there are people working at the local newspapers down there, or they certainly were, and they're very happy. They don't want to go to nationals. They don't want to go anywhere. They love it there. But that didn't sort of sate you.
No,
really.
No. I think I wanted the Radio 1 breakfast show.
Right.
So I was doing like a Saturday afternoon show and doing comedy features and bad soap operas, which fortunately I've brought one back to TalkSport recently, of which you star.
I've been on it.
Yeah. Deputy Mayor Moore.
Didn't get any extra pay.
No. So I sort of started doing that. And so no, I didn't. That certainly wasn't, that wouldn't have been enough for me.
Mm.
And I was constantly making demos and sending them everywhere. But you know, when you made a demo then, you had to make a CD.
Yeah.
And you had to like, I'd like put a picture of me like badly slotted in the front of the CD.
Right.
And I'd have my, and I'd like put it in a Jiffy bag, and then I'd post them all off to like Virgin and Kiss and Radio One and and all that. And,
my last year of university, I was still editing with reel to reel tape. Because I did media at university.
Right,
I was still teaching editing with reel to reel.
First, I think the first report I ever did, which was about dogs having their tails cut off, I think.
My goodness.
Yeah. Well, there's a word for it, and I can't remember it now. And one of the producers that did that, it was on a reel to reel, I think the first one I ever did.
Right.
But yeah,
people listening to this now will be like, what
I know, like the
about?
Kids. For the kids. Well, I was sending CDs off and then hearing nothing. Yeah. When you got a letter from like Virgin Radio, just going, oh, that was nice, send another one in 6 months. Oh, well, at least I've got somewhere.
Yeah.
But, like, this is so exciting.
Yeah.
I know I'm sort of going lots of circles about the chronology.
But the kind of work you now do, it was a seductive thing for you quite early on, and you realised that's what you want to do. You never thought about doing anything else but after that.
I think my dad was like, what are you doing?
Right.
I think he'd once been at a dinner where Chris Tarrant was there and thought he was a bit showy and had based show business on Chris Tarrant.
Okay, right.
And I've met Chris Tarrant occasionally, and he's a perfectly nice chap.
He did a legendary radio show, didn't he, of course?
Yeah, of course. Capital Breakfast for years and years and years.
Yeah.
But I like that my dad decided that. And my dad, you know, did grow up with not a lot and became quite miraculously a professor of medicine at Cambridge, right?
Right,
like,
okay.
It's like totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have teachers for one of his A-levels.
So he was an exceptional guy, hardworking guy.
Yeah, yeah. So for me to sort of pick this flippant, ludicrous profession, he sort of said, look, set yourself a target of like 28, you know, and if you're nowhere, you've got time to go back and be a lawyer.
Mm.
I think when I got Soccer AM, I rang him. And
how old were you when you got Soccer AM?
29.
Okay.
And that's he said
no.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah,
29.
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm very lucky because of my upbringing that meant I was sort of secure.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a problem that the media has, is that there's lots of problems with lack of representation in the media. But one is people who can afford to do work experience for no money and those things.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
And I was lucky that I had the security that I knew that if it didn't work out, there was somewhere I could go back to, I guess.
Yeah, I find that we're obviously a pretty small company here. We try and make sure we pay people fairly so they have the best chance. So not just for them, but because we can get the best people, right? Mm-hmm. You can't be making a decision about who you want to work with on whether they can give up the time or that kind of stuff. It just doesn't really work.
Well, and also you want to be able to hear from different voices, right?
Yeah.
This is a pivotal moment in football right now. I don't know when this is going out, but you know, you hear what Danny Rose is saying and Raheem Sterling. There is a huge problem that, you know, Darren Lewis is pretty much the only senior journalist who is black, right?
Yeah.
In football writing.
Yeah.
And that goes across the board with broadcast and TV.
And that fosters a situation where Darren, who we've both worked with and we both like, I'm sure, is only ever used to talk about those issues, which becomes ridiculous. It becomes absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And if you're him, you'd probably be thinking, well, why are you bringing me in just for this, right?
Yeah.
I'm either a good guy, a broadcaster or a journalist, or I'm
totally,
not, kind
totally.
Of thing. So I completely agree, yeah. Let's fast forward to then more recent times. The Football Weekly thing, the elephant in the room.
Oh, yeah.
So you were presumably the most happy of everyone about this split between The Guardian to The Totally Football Show.
This was, I mean, if anybody struck gold with the timings and everything.
Because before that, you were a guest presenter when James couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And
so I used to guest on that. And who should be sitting there is Gab Marcotti from The Game.
Oh,
I presume,
of course.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to sit in for Jimbo on The Guardian. I used to sit in for Gab on The Times. And when I sat in on The Times, most people were sort of happy because it was more relaxed. When I sat in for Jimbo, I just got absolute... I mean, not as much... The criticism was grammatically correct, which was interesting after sort of lots of people just shouting, bring back Lovejoy out of vans, which is sort of the previous decade.
Yeah, quite a lot.
But yeah, when it happened, I was on holiday in Italy with my wife and Barry rang and he said... And this was literally a week before the season.
Mm.
And Barry rang and went, I won't do his voice. He just went, Jimbo's gone. If you don't get this job, you are shit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And
But you had guest presented it before, yeah. and you'd got quite a lot of stick for that.
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's a really good, you know that film, is it Downfall, about Hitler? And they changed the subtitles.
It was
a brilliant...
It's like a big meme.
There's a brilliant, when I'm sitting in for Jimbo...
Meme.
Oh, yeah, it's like the 5-minute thing, the full subtitle thing. It's definitely worth watching. I think the Ramble's mentioned.
Is it?
In the subtitle. It's somebody who definitely gets this. You know, there's all sort of things about Slavia Prague away kits and false nines and all this. And, you know, this sort of, how can we have this banter merchant? And I think the interesting thing is that when I used to sit in and I was doing Soccer AM, they are arguably at the two poles of sports broadcasting.
So you were too straight for Soccer AM, but too bantery for Weekly.
Well, I mean, you're going to get criticism whatever you do, but my thought was actually, you know, if you think about all of football broadcasting, you'd probably put Football Weekly at sort of the most highbrow end and Soccer AM at the least.
Yeah.
And actually, there's not a massive
difference.
Obviously, they're difference in how they're produced and how they're made and they're different formats, but you're still talking about the same stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So actually, this idea, there were certainly some listeners who were like, we can't have this person anywhere near this.
Yeah.
But ostensibly, you're just sitting talking about football.
Yeah, but there is a James Richardson, again, nice guy, like him. He's got a cult following him.
Oh, really does,
and so for you, you must have felt a bit like Davey Moyes.
Well, the thing was, I...
Who had a few caretaker stints before and they got absolutely pilloried out of the stadium.
Yeah, no, you're right. I tend to think, like, none of us are indispensable, right? That everybody panics about... Everyone panicked about, you know, Tim Lovejoy leaving Soccer AM or whatever. If Gary Lineker left Match of the Day... You know, we go, oh my God, you know, we'd still, Keyes and Gray, right? Keyes and Gray started to think they were more important than Arsenal v Liverpool. Like people literally turn on to watch the football match.
What do you think of those two? Did you have any experience with them?
When I first got to Sky, there were definitely people who were more welcoming.
Right.
I will say. Stelling, lovely. I remember Jamie Redknapp was really nice. Alan Smith is an absolute gentleman.
Yeah.
Martin Tyler's lovely.
Yeah.
Those, you know, that sort of little team were, you don't spend a lot of time together. It's very rare your paths crossed.
Sure.
But they were sort of, we are the power. We hold the power
here.
We're
the power base.
You know,
were they like openly rude to you?
No. I wouldn't say they're openly rude to me. I remember the Ryder Cup had finished and I was in the Chelsea box that Sky had and everyone came in, obviously, and they were more sort of taking the mic than as opposed to, hey, welcome, you know, this must be exciting for you.
Yeah.
And I was too scared. Before the show, we were talking about not showing any vulnerability or not showing weakness in this environment, which is a bit like in football.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't confident then, A, because I didn't know how to do a TV show. I was just so desperate for anyone to tell me that Saturday's episode had been okay. I'm so pleased Twitter didn't exist then.
Yeah.
So I wasn't in the right frame to be like, you know, you're just a person.
Yeah.
Right. But I didn't, they weren't openly rude to me, no.
It's kind of bullying behaviour though, no?
I think you're trying to get more. I don't think I'd never say that. No,
okay.
They were perfectly polite and decent to me.
It's kind of like alpha male. This is our territory.
It was very alpha male. Yeah, Sky was like that. I mean, TalkSport was a bit like that, but Sky was really like that.
I don't find TalkSport like that bad at all. Really,
no,
nowhere near as bad as my impression of it. Yeah. When I started.
You're actually that's a fair point. I had an image before I got there that it was a different, you know, there are some very bright, you do stuff for Hawksby and Jacobs, right?
Yeah.
That is a brilliant radio program.
Yeah.
And two very enlightened, thoughtful broadcasters. Mm.
But it happens a lot, Max, doesn't it? When you go into any sort of broadcast environment and there is an elder statesman kind of guy there, and it's always a guy, and they're like, this is my territory kind of thing. I mean, I've been like, I remember being shoulder barged on set by like Jeremy Thompson at Sky News before.
Really?
Yeah, because he's just like, who are these young kids? You know, I'm the big guy here.
And I
can imagine Graham Keyes being very much like, I don't have any experience of working with them, but I can imagine it being like that.
When I was reading the news on the Peterborough breakfast show, when the Radio Cambridgeshire breakfast show was split between Peterborough and Cambridge, the presenter, he said to me, because, you know, the newsreader, you sort of get to do an Anne Finley story and maybe you get an extra minute of airtime, right, if you have a good one.
Yeah.
He said to me, this is pretty much verbatim before the show, he said, look, I'm really happy, and this was not ironic, the way he said this, I'm really happy for you to join in on the show, but as Tom O'Connor says on Crosswits, I do the jokes. Which is like, and it's sort of like red rag to a bull, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, come
straight
on
in there. Yeah,
whereas I used to do the sport occasionally for Danny Baker when he was at BBC London.
Yeah.
And because Danny's so good, he would let you go off on one for 5 minutes.
Oh, he's a legend, yeah.
It didn't matter what you had.
No.
He could either build on it, join in, or just do something better afterwards.
Yeah.
So, like, he was actually a very generous broadcaster like that.
There's no subject that he can't talk about. Same with Danny Kelly as
well. I think Danny did a week of... He did a phone-in of what is the most boring thing that exists. And I think the listeners decided it was a plastic bag. And then he said, right, next week, we are only doing plastic bags.
Right.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant because it's just like, right, he gets it, right?
He's so confident as well.
It's so confident because then most people are like, oh God, we need 5 phone-in subjects and they've got to be, oh, we need to, you know, like on Talk Sport, it's like you can do, if you want to get 20 phone calls, you just do who's the bigger club, Liverpool or Manchester United? Yeah. And in your own bubble, you'll get 20, 30, you'll get hundreds of phone calls.
And you'll think, that's lit up the switchboard.
It's amazing. What a brilliant show. But actually, you're just doing who do you support? Whereas if you do, come on, let's build a football team of footballers who have done you a favour, right?
Yeah.
And you get a phone, you get the one call that says, I ran out of petrol and I turned round and the man pushing my car was David Platt.
Yeah.
Well, that is better than however many people saying Liverpool and Manchester United are better.
Agree.
And Danny is...
The king of that.
The king of that.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break, after which we're going to finally talk about Football Weekly and why... Max and I and everyone involved all hate each other. Don't go away. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to This Ramble Meets with Max Rushton, sponsored by Bet365, of course. Max, I want to talk about Football Weekly now.
Okay.
I also want to talk a bit about how you deal with criticism online, because it's a quite interesting method and an interesting, engaging kind of way, whereas I prefer just to ignore it, but that's another story. Football Weekly is a big show. You said it's at the top of the show, it's the biggest show, did you?
I did say that.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with it.
Should we agree to disagree?
We can. I mean, I don't, you know, we can.
Why won't you let me goad you?
Well, because I don't think you're right. Like, we would, like, because I don't really follow the stats, right? I mean, I think when I took over Football Weekly, I think everyone was a bit scared that I thought we'd have a bit of a drop.
Yeah.
And then we'd be okay.
Luckily, it coincided with the massive explosion of podcasts in general.
Well,
right?
You could argue that was the reason. Anyway, and I might be wrong here, so I absolutely hate doing any of those. Something I'm doing is doing really well. I don't like that sort of unedifying. Yeah. Like, let it.
Well,
be
so
good.
Rare as well, isn't it?
Right, well, it's also true. Right? But I think the figures have doubled, right?
I imagine you've doubled. Look, no one wants to hear us.
Like,
no one wants to hear us swing our dicks around.
No.
This, but I'm sure it's probably bigger than around. Who knows? It doesn't matter. Okay,
doesn't matter.
We all value our audience.
If you're happy, I'm happy. We're happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't record ours in an office. I'm just joking. So, what was it like when you first stepped up? I know you've done a bit of guesting already, but to get into those shoes. And first of all, were you surprised that the split even happened in the first place?
Well, I had no idea really how it worked within...
No one really knew, did they?
No, no one knew. I mean,
it's quite
like
a well-kept secret, wasn't it?
It was a well-kept secret, and this is what I've heard, and this may be completely incorrect, so I don't... anyone from the Totally Football Show can
I don't imagine they'll listen.
It's unlikely, but they can disagree. My understanding is, and this might be totally incorrect, that they thought if they did it so close to the start of the season, that the Guardian would not have time, so they would buy it back.
And, oh, I see.
And
right,
then they could keep Barry, who is a really obviously an absolutely pivotal
huge part of the show.
Of that
show. Absolutely.
So I don't know if that's true or not.
But did Barry even know?
No.
That's
not until very
late. That's problematic, isn't it?
That is problematic.
How do you feel about that as his friend?
I would have done it differently. Yeah. I think look, we've all been in situations where you have to keep your cards very close to your chest when you're getting a new job somewhere, because
of course.
So when I got given Stockholm, they said don't tell anyone, and
it's like when you get a new job as a doctor in Doctor Who, right?
Yeah,
exactly. Got to sit on it for like three months or something.
Yeah. So I got that job. They said don't tell anyone, and then three pints in that evening, and I had a Blue Peter audition that day as well. I had to turn to my friends and say, lads, I've had a very odd day. So
right.
I told everybody and just hoped nobody knew. But I think that's what they wanted to do. The Guardian, so Barry told me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then the Guardian said, oh, can you do the first few Football Weeklies? Because Jimbo's off.
Yeah.
And I said, that's strange, because normally I get booked like 4 months in advance.
Right.
And then they rang and said, okay, here's the thing.
Right.
And it's very rare you're in a position of power, right, in
yeah.
this industry.
Yeah.
So I basically said, look, you either give it to me or you don't. But the worst case for me is I come in and do the first 10.
And you bin me
And
up.
Then, you know, I take the hit and then someone else comes in.
Yeah.
So they were up against it. It's the only time ever that I've been in one of those odds things. Odds for the next presenter.
I saw
presenter,
that. Yeah, I remember
honestly.
Seeing that. Yeah.
And the funny thing is I knew, and I was like, I know. And I was 11 to 4. I was like hot favourite. Like, it was 11 to 4. Yeah. 7-1 was second favourite, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really know. I don't want to go to prison, right?
yeah,
so
okay,
I'm sitting
right.
there going, God, I could lump on here.
Yeah.
And I didn't, because I was like, what do you do? What do you do in this situation? Like, what a weird, like, because I've obviously, I was doing a radio show with Sam Allardyce 3 days ago, and he'd gone from 50-1 to odds on for West Brom. So I just spent the whole show going, I'm here with the new West Brom boss, Big Sam.
Yeah.
But like, I've never been in that situation before,
no.
So that was strange.
Kind of interesting, being in the theatre rather than commenting on what's happening.
Yeah. I think we didn't deal with it brilliantly at the start, because obviously on Twitter there was a huge meltdown.
Yeah.
But there are lots of people who listen to this who don't sit on social media all day.
Yeah.
So for the first podcasts, we were all a bit like, you know, Barry doing jokes about treachery and you know, like, who has their head turned by, you know, PSG. I think Neymar's deal had just gone through and we were making all these terrible analogies about that. I think at the start, a lot of people don't like change, but eventually you just...
Well, it's happened. You can't really do about it.
There's nothing you can do about it. Yeah.
Someone's got a host, I think.
And I genuinely think, right, so the difference between, like, you guys are the same every week, right?
All right.
Okay. Not
twice a week, thanks.
It's the same old shit.
Yeah, twice a week.
Twice a week. Yeah. You know, once you've listened to one, you've listened to them all. My feeling about this, about the two pods, is that Jimbo is obviously brilliant, right? Their first team squad is great.
Mm.
I love Julien. Yeah. Julien Laurent is a lovely man, beautiful man.
Yeah, he also sometimes comes in and does on the concert with us.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah. Brilliant footballer as well.
Yeah, is he really? Okay.
Really good player.
Okay, right.
And James, obviously, and I've worked with all these guys, Rafa as well, they're, you know, they're really good. I think where we are very lucky is that our strength in depth, our squad is vast.
Did you have any role in trying to convince some of the people who were going over to Totally to stay at The Guardian?
Not massively, no. I think there are very few people who've done both.
Oh, that's what I mean.
I think Philippe, I think we said...
It felt like people had to choose, really.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They did.
Okay.
And I think some people wanted to do both, and I think The Guardian said, listen...
You can't
do that, which is totally understandable, right?
Yeah.
It's like working for Sky and BT, right?
Fine.
So I think Philippe might have done one for them, and we said, hey, Philippe. Mm. So he came with us, because we're the goodies, right?
The important thing is, I suppose, if you want to listen to Andy Brassel, you can get Football Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to listen to James Horncastle, you can go Totally. If you want to listen to them both, you can listen to one of our shows, right?
Well, I guess so. That is too much. Having them both together
is overkill, is it?
It's like
a triple magnum.
It's European overkill.
Yeah.
You can only have one of them at any one
time.
True,
yeah. If they actually touch, they create like a vortex into another dimension.
And that's completely unacceptable.
And where everyone's a libero.
But I tend to think you can, you know, like, listen to what you like to listen to, and it's all okay, and we're all still alive.
Absolutely. Max, what are you trying to do with Football Weekly that perhaps to differentiate between the James Richardson era? Have you made a conscious effort to be different, or just are you just thinking, right, I'm not James Richardson, so I'm just going to be myself?
Yeah, you can't pretend to be somebody else, right? I mean, it's also really cliche, isn't it? It's those cliches.
People see through it straight away.
When you're starting, people say, be yourself and don't take no for an answer. Now, be yourself is really good advice.
Yeah.
Don't take no for an answer is actually not good advice, because if the head of Radio 1 has said, you can't come in and do early breakfast. Don't go in there at 3 a.m.
So, no, not at all. I mean, obviously, like, I've worked with Barry for so long that we naturally, we work together how we work together on the radio. So, so it's a slightly, it's obviously the radio show has less content in it, right?
Yeah.
But, so it wasn't like I was stepping into this thing going, oh, this is the unknown. I'd done it before. And Barry and I know each other incredibly well.
Yeah.
And I knew all the other people a bit. And what I what we try and do, what I like to do, is if we have a new person on the pod, and we're always trying to bring new people in, is to make sure you've got two established people.
Yeah.
So if you bring a new person in, but you've got Barry and Jonathan Wilson, then that new person can relax, because even if they deliver zero, it'll still be a good pod.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So actually, it's better for them.
But what's football? The thing that I'm obviously going to be incredibly biased in the situation. It's hard to be objective, but I feel like with the Football Ramble, people know what the kind of show they're going to get. Now, it might not be for everyone. They might think it's too wacky or whatever.
It is a bit wacky.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. And but people know what they're going to get.
A lot of in jokes.
There are. Yeah. Yeah, there are.
In fact, I'm the producer, Jonathan, wants, it's just desperate for me to stop repeating jokes. Like, that's his absolute dream.
Really?
Is that once I've got my teeth into a gag, I would just... Mark and Lard did that, right? Now, Mark and Lard were the kings of that. Something is funny, and then it isn't funny, and then it just gets funny again because you can't help it.
I think you've got to find a balance, haven't you?
Yeah, and I haven't. Someone listens I haven't got that.
We probably haven't either. I think it's very hard to get right. But my question was just purely going to be, to me, the Football Weekly... Sorry, Football Week and the Totally Football Show, they're kind of similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing anything to try and differentiate yourself? Or are you just thinking, right, they're an ersatz version of us. They went and did their own thing, so we're just going to crack on.
I mean, you're always thinking of different things to do and specials and those kind of things. But actually, what I think we are is, if you don't have time to take in every bit of sports content that exists and you have 2 hours free a week, you'll get everything you need from the Premier League, the Champions League, Europe, Football League.
At a digest, basically.
You will digest everything done in a way where, and I think you and I probably agree on this, football is important, and there are some really serious things happening within football that don't necessarily get enough coverage. But the game itself is a game, right? It's meant to be fun, and there's a tone that we have that I think is probably not dissimilar to your tone, that is, we're here to enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
Football is meant to be entertainment. It's meant to be your release, whatever. So let's not take it so crazily seriously. You know, that's what that's why I would never want to host Super Sunday. I could never stand...
Give it the gravitas,
I could never be there and go, welcome to St. Mary's. You join us 2 hours before kickoff as an out-of-sorts Southampton take on mid-table Bournemouth in a game that means barely anything to anyone. Like, I couldn't and go, you know, this is so important. But, like, I know it matters to those fans.
That sounds
of course
quite good,
does.
Actually, that did.
Thanks very much.
Arrigo Sacchi said, football is the most important of the least important things.
Okay, that's probably fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I love it.
He summed it up in a sentence there, and it's taken you about 3 or 4 minutes.
It's taken me about 45 minutes, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's what it is. I've got lots of friends who say, do you know what? I don't see any football now, but I listen to the pod.
Yeah, okay.
So but I also think if you listen to everything, well, you'll listen to it as well. So I think that's essentially what we are, which is you can come to us and you will get the big talking points, the big debates. You'll also get the fun stuff that's happened. Mm. You'll round up Europe in a way that if you want more on Europe, there are places you can get it.
On the continent.
For example. Mm. But if you just want to know, what are the big things from Spain and the big things from Germany?
Yeah.
So, like, we've started doing, like, little reports of, like, Archie Rintut will do a report on Germany and Paolo will do a report on Italy.
Yeah.
And when they're in, so we had Paolo in on yesterday talking about and he was actually brilliant talking about the racism in Italy. If when they're in, we'll go into detail about that. We go, right, Philippe's here. Let's go on to Ligue 1. Let's talk about what's happening at PSG properly. Yeah. But you're not going to do that every week. And you're not going to please everybody, right?
No.
There are always people saying you don't do enough on... It's like on TalkSport. Why don't you care about Bradford? You never care about...
Yeah, you can't please everyone all the time.
No.
And, you know, on that in-jokey kind of thing, I find I'm quite ambivalent about that for the simple reason that clearly, I want as many people to listen to our show as possible, and I want people to feel like they can get into it. It's not esoteric. But at the same time, radio and podcasting is so intimate. It's so like people feel like they're your friend, and you want to make the people who've dedicated so much time listening to you over the years feel really like they're part of a club as well.
Yeah.
And you have to try and find that balance, right?
Yeah.
But a second ago, you said about pleasing people and about getting criticism and all that kind of thing. And you do sort of take people head on. But I feel like you probably spend too much time worrying about what people think about you, because you give them so much oxygen. You give them the oxygen of publicity,
yeah,
which is not something I feel naturally that comfortable doing, because I feel like I can't get derailed from what I'm trying to do. But you seem to embrace it and sort of go in there with both hands.
I'm really conflicted. For a start, every boss has told me not to do it. So right, it's probably naive, right?
Yeah.
And I sort of hope my bosses are smart enough to realise that the people... It's very rarely high achievers. It's not Sir Richard Branson who's saying,
no,
you're a melt pothole dry lunch, right? It just doesn't really
general
happen,
consensus,
right?
The general rule is that no one hates on someone doing worse than they are. Is that fair?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I suppose so. So I think when it started, like sometimes they are really funny, you know, sometimes it's somebody says, I don't know how, you know, somebody says, you effing C, you've ruined my life. I hate you. Why don't you just die? Mm. And then you look at their bio and it says, proud father, always respectful. We had one on the radio who said, you know, not only was he like, proud father, love my kids, love my grandkids. He was like, I hate you. You two are shit.
Yeah.
He also said, he was like, love the RSPB. I love waders or something like that. It's just like, you can't love the RSPB and be a troll, right? So what I tend to always,
why do you care?
Send them love.
Do you care?
I do not give a shit.
Do you not honestly think it gives the impression that you do care?
Maybe. I'll tell you what I think is, if you know in your mind, and people can disagree whether I'm doing a good job or not, if you are confident in what you're doing,
yeah,
you don't care, right?
Yeah.
And if we can get material out of it, so like sometimes at like 1 minute to 11 on the radio, someone will tweet me and Barry going, time to switch off, talk, you know, Andy Wilmot, time to switch off the only 2 hours I don't listen to.
Yeah.
And me and Barry can get 10 minutes of content going, oh, yeah, actually this is really good for Andy because he's listening the whole time. So yeah, like he needs
a break.
2 hours.
Yeah.
He needs a break. He needs some, yeah, chores. He, yeah, probably needs some shut eye, like, yeah, all this. So...
Has it ever affected you, even when it first started, because social media is a relatively new thing?
The first time I got it was an email sent to BBC London. And it floored me.
Yeah.
Because I was, at the time I'd just started doing Breakfast and I wasn't really confident with it. And I certainly am pleased that it didn't, I think it'd be much harder to start now.
Yeah, 100%.
Than start when we started.
Mm.
But, and I think you, when you're starting out and you're less confident, but I just... You never, like, everyone gets hate, like David Attenborough gets hate mail, right? What are you going to do? I have started to think I'm going to give these people less oxygen just because I think there's so much sort of bile and hate that why add any more?
Yeah.
You know, why give anyone the opportunity?
That's the thing, Max, because I think one thing feeds another, right? The reason I try not to get involved is because I feel like it gives people almost the legitimacy that you are acknowledging what they're saying, engaging with it and giving a response. The best thing I think you can do is just mute it, because then they can just shout into the vortex forever and they'll never know, and you're not feeding it.
Yeah.
You know, because there are people out there who will say, Max Rushton always replies to this stuff, so I'm going to get stuck in, you know?
There is a sack Max Rushton account, right? There's somebody has set up an account to get me sacked from TalkSport.
And I told you, I'm sorry about that.
No, I know. But anyway, he tweeted me, or he or she, I don't know who it is, tweeted me, and they had 3 followers. So I quote tweeted it and went, you know, this is brilliant. Like, actually, to me, that was like a sort of badge of honour, I guess.
I guess it means you've made it, yeah.
Obviously, he's now got about 500 followers, of which like 10 or 15 are good friends of mine, and it includes me.
He's got a full manifesto on there.
Oh, yeah, you read his manifesto. It's amazing.
Our 10 key points manifesto for the Sack Max Rushton, quite hard to say, Sack Max Rushton movement.
Yeah.
Boycott any retailer advertising the Max Rushton show, e.g. Wix.
Yeah.
Boycott the Guardian newspaper.
Yeah.
Start another petition to strip Sir Bradley Wiggins of his title until he ceases all association with Max Rushton.
That's already happened.
He has ceased that. That was your decision, though, wasn't it?
Well, arguably.
Okay. Number 10 is the best one.
Yeah, it's so good.
Never give up. Enough is enough.
Now, hang on. Where's the one about Gaviscon?
Never buy Gavaskon again.
Never buy Gavaskon. So this guy's actually, I have muted him now. Like, he's got too much because he's never...
Come on, no one buys The Guardian.
But honestly, it's like that is hilarious that he's gone to this, he or she has gone to this trouble, right, to write a manifesto.
I mean, the profile picture is you with a clown nose on.
I know. That's also been made the profile picture of our football team WhatsApp group.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm really conflicted, and I think you're probably right. It's probably better just to ignore them. But it's a version of mean tweets, right? Of these people just reading out this. Like, some of them are so funny. And the other thing I think is strange is when someone goes, "I hate you, you're awful," and you reply going, "Cheers, Dave. You know, stay strong." And then they're like, "Oh my god, you legend! You replied."
Yeah. Okay.
You're like,
yeah.
Come on, stick to your guns. Then.
Yeah.
So I am conflicted. I definitely do it less. Mm. And it might not be right. I also try not to. For example, I tweeted about Danny Rose today, saying like, I agree with Danny Rose. Like, fair play to him for standing up to.
This is Danny Rose saying that he's counting down the days till he can stop playing football because he's fed up of the, I guess, institutional racism within the sport, which came out sort of around April time. Yeah,
and a lot of people reply going, "Oh yeah, he's a millionaire, gets loads of." You know, how dare he, you know, why doesn't he quit now? If he wants to quit, he can earn his millions and then quit. And what I try to do, actually, if I reply, is to say, I don't agree, like, with all due respect, I don't agree with you. I'm really reticent to say you just don't understand, because I just don't. I think what you want to do with people is try and sort of carry them, is try and change their
hearts. Can you ever do that through Twitter, though?
Well, you can definitely not do it. Yeah. By reply going, "You're an idiot, you don't get it."
Sure.
Right? And that's just not going to help anyone. Yeah. And I find that when you're on the radio as well and you're doing phone-ins on difficult subjects. Well, I was on TalkSport and we were doing something on the rainbow laces, and a transgender person rang up TalkSport, which to me was like, wow. I'm maybe naively, I just thought, I don't know how many trans people are listening to TalkSport.
Yeah.
And the bravery of them to ring up and tell their story. And lots of people reacting to that going, oh, you know, they were talking about how nervous they were about getting on a train with football fans, and they were a football fan, but they didn't get attacked. And so lots of people were going, well, they didn't get attacked, so what's the story?
Yeah.
So I'm really careful not to go, that isn't the point. To say, you don't get it, you're an idiot.
So what you're saying, you don't want to condescend or patronise people. You want to try and lift the whole thing, of the debate.
Just think, we just need to be more nuanced in that. And I suppose with trolls as well, if somebody hates you, they hate you. And you can just say, look, it's a free country, you're allowed your opinion. I sometimes think I won't bother. I've muted a lot more people than I used to. I don't think I've blocked anybody. But I am conflicted about that, because very few people. James Blunt does it,
but he does it brilliantly.
It's slightly different.
It is different. He does it very well.
He does it really well. Yeah,
I'm not saying he's funnier than you, Max.
That's okay.
No, I'm just saying he does it very well.
He'll probably get TalkSport breakfast before I do.
Well, it's a good. Not everyone can get it, can they?
No,
everyone
right.
can get it, mate. You know,
you're probably right.
We'd all like that. But it always reminds me of that scene in Extras, the Ricky Gervais vehicle,
where
the agent Darren Lamb, played by Stephen Merchant, and he's got Barry from EastEnders.
Yeah.
And he says, the thing is, when Ross Kemp went into the ITV offices and said, "I want £1 million or nothing," they gave him £1 million. I go in there with Barry from EastEnders and they've chosen the nothing option. So you never know.
Can I tell you a brilliant Barry from EastEnders story?
Please. What's his name? Sean Williamson.
Sean Williamson.
Yeah.
So the guy, Chris, who booked the footballers for Soccer AM back in the day, works at Chelsea now. He books Sean Gota for the show. And so, you know, we get in on the Friday, me and Helen, and we do the script meeting, and then we go and like research Sean Gota, and we try and think of, you know, interesting and different questions we can ask Sean Gota. And then, you know, a couple of the assistant producers go and put that package together of his greatest goals. And then if we see funny things on YouTube, whatever, we say, "Oh, look, can you get this clip for this show?" So lots of work goes into what is like a 10-minute interview for someone. There'll be lots of people cutting different things and getting different pieces for this interview, right? And so we get it all ready. And about sort of 5, 6pm, we're sort of finishing off the script. And Chris walks into the office and says, "I've had a shiter, everybody." He said, he texted Sean Gota's agent to say, "What's Sean up to at the moment?" And Sean's, you can see where it's going.
Yeah.
Sean's agent replied going, He's just doing a spot of writing. He doesn't think he's going to do Panto this year, right?
Right.
Which is not the reply.
Not expected, the reply. I mean,
it was true. Sean Gotter wasn't playing the Panther that year, but we were like, he'd somehow got them the wrong way round and had booked Sean Williamson instead of Sean Gotter. Right?
Did Sean Williamson turn up?
So Sean Williamson turned up and he answered every question we had for Sean Gotter, and he was absolutely brilliant. And then we got them on together like later that season.
Yeah.
And just all credit to Sean Williamson, because obviously he set himself up brilliantly in extras, but he's a brilliant guy. And it was just one of those moments. There were moments off air in Soccer AM. There's that one. There was one where Mel B came in, right? And Mel B just got bored, right? About 11:30 and just decided to go and get a Nando's, right? It's just leaving, right? I think Ian Wright was on the show at the same time. And we're like, you know, you're booked for the whole show. You've got to...
Sure.
So one of our... Dev, who worked in the office, was dressed as Jason Lee in classic Badilan Skinner pineapple on his head.
Yeah.
And
looks a bit racist now, but yeah, carry on.
True.
Look at the footage of it now.
Oh, it does look a bit racist now. Yeah. I mean, Dev is...
Problematic.
Dev is...
Oh, no, I'm not saying him. I'm just saying...
Black. It is problematic now. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had Dev, who happened to be black, with a pineapple on his head.
Yeah.
But in the green room, pleading with Mel B. There's a man with a pineapple on his head pleading with one of the Spice Girls not to leave to get a Nando's. I was just such a great image. And the third one, my third favourite, is... Not that you asked me for my three favourites.
No, I didn't. But I think we'll end on this. This is great. So this better be good.
A soccerette came in and they'd say, what are your skills? And she said, I can ice skate, right? So the exec producer had spent, like, blown our budget on getting one of those ice rinks.
Those ones I just put in there.
Yeah, they just put in outside. Yeah. And your skill is ice skating. Great. Come to the Soccer M ice rink. We'd always just call, you know, as if it's always been there, and we went out. And so we were like, there we are. We're just rehearsing. We were like, so you've got 30 seconds, skate. And she could not ice skate, like, for love nor money, right?
On live TV?
No, this was the rehearsal, right?
Right.
And the exec took it a bit seriously, right? I was just like, it's funny. She said she could, she can't. Like, what can we do?
Great telly,
Yeah. But anyway, in our ears, right, you could just hear. I don't know, maybe he just spent so much money of it. So in your ears. So she's like, doing her own thing here.
What was she actually doing? What level are we talking about?
I mean...
She couldn't even stand up.
I mean, like, she could stand up, but it was a bit... It wasn't even graceful. It was like one step... Like,
she's thought at that point, they're never going to ask me to do that.
Placing the feet.
Right.
So we're all there going, oh my God. We're like, because I felt really, obviously you feel really sorry for, like, she's there and she can't do it. And this is really awkward. And the exec producer's just going, somebody, it sounds like these classic TV things.
Yeah.
Somebody fucking teach her to ice skate. And you're like, just look around.
What,
you've got Tubes
hour?
And Rocket there. You haven't got Jane Torville on hand. Like, what do you think's going to happen?
What did you do on the live bit? You just didn't do it?
No, we did it. I think I can't. Do you know what? I can't even remember. I think we did it, and she just wasn't very good. And we just went, there you are. Not a very good ice skater.
Was that 2015? And before you knew it, that was the end of that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Max, you've been an absolute gent. Thanks for coming behind enemy lines.
Hey, not a problem.
I never thought I'd get you talking into a Football Ramble mic. And I know that if we ever need a presenter, you will be someone who's easily swayed. Because quite a short attention span.
Yeah.
Love a pound note.
I'm just follow the fun.
Yeah, follow the fun. That's exactly. Follow the fun. That's what people who love a pound note say, to stop people thinking they love a pound note.
Listen, everything I've done, every bit of work I've done, I've done for the art.
For the people, presumably, as well.
For the art, yeah.
Yeah.
And for the people. And there to pay the mortgage.
Part-time presenter, full-time artist, Max Rushton. Thank you very much. Have you got any message for the Football Rambles fans before you go? Because I think they'll be interested. Some of them may not even listen to Football Weekly. So have you got a message for them before you go?
Glasgow, 22nd of April. live show at SWG3. Elmwood Hall in Belfast, 23rd of April.
Yeah.
We're doing London on the 10th of May. Come along.
I think it's kind of quaint you're doing these little live shows. You should do a world tour someday.
I'm quite jealous of
that. you'll be welcome. What about a cameo? Hey? Let's talk about that later.
Okay.
All right. Will your boss let you do that?
Doubt it.
Okay, we'll give it a go.
All right.
Thanks, Max.
Excuse me.
This episode of Ramble Meets was sponsored by Bet365.
This was a Radio Staccato production.